Jeanne Flavelle's Hot Commodity Podcast Series. Empowering clients with commercial intelligence, supply chain expertise, and risk management solutions.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Mike Coughlin, President, CEO of McKinney Flavelle, and today is June 5th, 2020, and welcome to our Hot Commodity Podcast Series. I'm joined today by Nicole Thomas, Vice President of Information Services. How are you, Nicole?
I am doing okay. Mike, how are you?
Oh, man, I'm doing good for a Friday. And, you know, it's going to be a good weekend. But, you know, I want to start with something, Nicole. And I want to start with, you know, me. I end every podcast with the same attitude of gratitude. You know, live your life and be grateful for what you have. You know, you guys all hear that. But I want to go with a word that you and I both want to channel out to everybody. And that's the word empathy.
Yes.
And with all the craziness going on in the world, I think that the world needs some empathy, don't you think?
I certainly agree. I think that's as human as you can be, is to be empathetic to your fellow human being. And what better thing can we all do for each other and for this world than to try to put ourselves in each other's shoes for a second and see things from another person's perspective? That's important. So
that's exactly right. And, you know, a challenge for everybody out there is really concentrate on being more empathetic, listening more and loving more, I think is a really good thing. And with all the craziness that's going on with COVID, with everything else that we're seeing out there, you know, people just need to be nicer to each other. Understanding. And you know what? There's another saying that's pretty cool too. And that's, be more curious than judgmental.
Yeah. I like that. I like that a lot. That's good. That's really good. And we start teaching our kids, and then we have another course of it as adults. I think
that's right.
It's good. Good. Good.
And I think we're on the cusp of some great changes in this.
I hope so. Definitely.
And I think that a lot of good is coming our way. And I think Mother Earth is saying, let's be nicer to each other and go from there. So I wanted to start that out because I think it's really important.
You forgot one thing, though. You also forgot one thing, though.
What's that?
Well, I had a milestone this week as well.
Oh my God, that's right. Yes. I had all these jokes, but you know, I realized that I'm on ice right now and I'm about to slip in.
Yes, yes. It's the big 4-0, man. Oh, it's the big 4-0. So if anybody wishes to cash at me, I can share those credentials with you. Don't hesitate to shoot me a quick email and we can start making the world a better place with me.
Yeah, just, you know, that sounds great. You know, that was a touchy one for me because, you know, you're 29, I thought you were 29.
Yeah, right. I can drink now. I'm legal. Yeah, I'm legal to drink now.
There you go. So, well, happy birthday.
Thank you.
I will pour a nice large beer this evening in your honor.
I appreciate that.
How's that sound?
Thank you. That sounds great. That sounds great. A drink sounds awesome right now.
Well, I thought today what we would do is give people a taste of what to expect or what we think might happen next week with the WASDE report. So would you like to do that? Would that sound fun?
Yeah, no. People might take issue with, you know, the term fun, but I think it's appropriate. We've got a WASDE report coming next week, so I'm sure a lot of folks would like to get our thoughts on what they might see in that release.
Sure. Let's do it.
So when we start with corn,
let's do corn, soybean, and we'll wrap up with some sugar.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right. You're on.
Well, as far as corn is concerned, you know, the big, sort of market expectation is, what additional changes will be made in the ethanol category of demand for 2019-20?
Right.
Obviously, ethanol production is rebounding. We're seeing that in the numbers. We've seen a few ethanol facilities come back online. And since peaking the week of April 17th, domestic ethanol stocks have dropped by nearly 20%. So that's another positive sign. And prices have recovered. You know, if you look at the continuous nearby futures contract, pricing is up by roughly 37 cents per gallon or about 45%. So that's also promising. Now, regarding the WASD, there does remain a question as to whether or not, you know, or I should say, there's a question as to how much of a downward adjustment to that corn usage category really would encompass what we've seen. And so, you know, between late March and the end of April, I guess call it, you know, sort of that 9 week period there. Domestic production was down roughly 40% versus 2019. Mm, mm. So if we use a yield of, you know, roughly 2.8 gallons per bushel of corn, corn usage fell from, you know, about 982 million bushels in 2019 for in that time frame to about 600 million bushels in 2020. Now, production, though improved, is still averaging somewhere between 75 or 80% of normal. So with each passing month that we see those sorts of levels of production, that could remove about 100 million bushels of corn usage on a monthly basis. So the bottom line is USDA may take another few hundred million bushels from the ethanol category, if not next week's report, maybe in future reports, if we see that we're hanging out around that 75 to 80% of normal consumption, which based on some of the unemployment numbers and sort of the effect overall of COVID may be the case for the foreseeable future. And even thinking about that from a global balance sheet standpoint, could also see a little strengthening in ending stocks globally as a result of some of the demand degradation throughout the world as it every country battled COVID.
Right.
Now, the other category of demand that it will get added scrutiny is feed. Mm-hmm. So corn usage for feed in 2019-20 may be a little overstated, and it's a challenging figure to pinpoint. Getting a hold of that information, it's a bit elusive during the crop year, and you tend to not have a really firm handle on it until the crop year is over. But if we consider that demand is for corn for feed is typically strongest in the first half of any given marketing year. So, you know, to put it in perspective, if you were to look at last year, more than 60% of feed use took place between September and February, right? And if we looked at feed usage for the first half of 2019-20, it was up 17% versus the year prior. Now, it's that third quarter usage that could get a little dicey. And that can account, the third quarter time frame can account for about 20% of total annual usage of corn for feed. Mm-hmm. Now, if we're looking at, you know, just some of the signals that are out there for us today, taking, for instance, the cattle on feed report. That last one put cattle placements in feedlots in April down by 22% from versus 2019. One of the second lowest April figure since USDA began reporting those numbers in the 1990s. So when you see numbers like that for, you know, what would be major consumers of corn as feed, then that also can drive a little scrutiny for what that category of demand will actually be by the time we get to the end of this year. So that's possible. And then, of course, I think the other figure to watch is acreage for 2021. Now, there may not be any adjustment to that in this next release. You know, last look at that from a farmer perspective was the prospective plantings report at the end of March, put that number at 97 million acres. Now, there's been a lot of, you know, sort of speculative thoughts on that and some anecdotal evidence to suggest that that number could come down a little bit. And unfortunately, we won't know that with much certainty until we get that acreage report at the end of June. But I think that's going to be a pretty good indicator of what the final acreage number will be for 2020/21, especially considering that, you know, most of this crop has been planted at this point. We're a little ahead of schedule. So with those farmer surveys coming out or being sort of conducted and concluded in early June, we should have a pretty good handle of what those numbers are going to be. Now, with December corn hovering around 330 a bushel now, you're starting to wonder how much forward selling has been done by farmers to this point, which would be an indicator or could at least give us a better handle on whether or not that acreage is actually going to be that high. But also, you know, from their perspective, trying to understand how basis is going to behave and whether farmers are expecting prices near those levels of around 330, or if they are risking the likeliness that values are going to at least at some point tip below $3 per bushel for that December contract by the time we get there. So with next week's release, I think market consideration will be given to how much demand has been lost in the current year versus how much production could decline and what offset that creates between the two. But again, may not see that acreage number touched until post the end of this month in the official acreage report.
Got it.
So that's corn.
Let's go over to our favorite soybeans.
Everybody's favorite is soybeans. Yeah. You know, I bet most people have no idea what a soybean looks like.
Yeah.
But, you know, pretty important in the agricultural economy.
Absolutely.
But I'll say, you know, for soy, just as in the case for corn, there's also consideration as to whether or not USDA will adjust the acreage numbers for 2020-21. Same scenario, except the opposite effect, that potentially looking at, you know, that balance sheet for corn and the potential for 3.4 or more billion bushels of corn ending stocks, that farmers may have said, maybe with some of that swing acreage, I'm going to do a little more in the way of soy. So that, of course, will be one of those questions. But when it comes to demand, I think USDA may choose to err on the side of cautious optimism when it comes to the soy balance sheet. So, you know, at the risk of sounding like a broken record, and wait a minute, for kids,
a record
is this thing that the old folks used to play music in the olden days. And if the record was damaged, it would skip. And I think your younger generations would refer to it as this thing called glitching and the song, glitchy. And the song on the record will repeat itself. So now that I'm officially a senior citizen and I've explained that metaphor, at the risk of sounding like a broken record or a glitch in Minecraft, you know, the focus for the soy complex and pricing remains China. As we've all seen over the years, China's arguably become the most relevant factor in the soy market. And when they buy our soybeans, the market tightens. When they buy our pork products, it helps to support strong crush demand and soybean meal consumption. And when they do neither, prices for all those products feel the pressure. Now, frankly, obviously, there's enough civil unrest to go around tied to both countries, but rhetoric between the U.S. and China on that topic is arguably worsening tensions between the two countries. You know, Trump threatens tariffs, Jinping threatens less imports from the U.S., and the fallout hits the soy complex directly. So that will continue to add some volatility to the soy market. But in terms of sort of gauging what impact that's going to have on the balance sheet, I think that leaves the USDA in a position of being reactive. You know, you don't want to take the numbers up too much and create a false sense of support for prices, but you also don't want to paint a worst case scenario prematurely and pressure prices. So, you know, if we're just kind of considering what's in front of us right now, looking at the crush category, U.S. crush, soy crush is up about 3.5% from last year. Hasn't shown any signs of slowing, but it also isn't far-fetched to expect some pressure on soy meal demand that leads to pressure on crush in the coming months. And particularly when you think about the hog segment. So, you know, pork processing capacity utilization fell to as low as 50% in late April.
Wow.
And though it's recovered, it's still sitting somewhere around, you know, 70, 75%. So it's not, you know, fully back to where it was.
Sure.
And we've all heard about the culling of inventories domestically. What may not have been fully considered, though, is the financial impact that may have had on these producers and how that will impact production moving forward. So something to think about. And then also, of course, again, thinking about China, exports of soybeans and where that's all going to kind of settle out and whether or not some of this recent weakness in the dollar and strength in the Brazilian real will help in that scenario. Because at least what we see now, as of the end of May, Chinese soy imports represent about 36% of the total number Chinese imports of soybeans represented about 36% of the total of soy exports for this current crop year. Big improvement from last year when that figure was, right around 20%, but still well below 2018 when China's share of exports were closer to 60%. And then as far as soybean oil is concerned, production's been good. Stocks have been growing, even in despite low oil yields. And although questions regarding the full impact of COVID remain, at least now things look what may be deceptively positive for demand. March soybean oil usage for biodiesel jumped to 656 million pounds. That's up 6% from 2019, higher than the month prior by about 14%. And although this market too likely took a big hit in April, its usage is a bit broader than that of ethanol. And so the effect of it may not have been as pronounced with biodiesel as what we saw with ethanol.
Right.
And, you know, we were seeing this pressure on soybean oil basis values in that time frame, which would be another red flag that usage is trending lower. And that sense has rebounded a bit, and that might be signaling either some a return to that biodiesel consumption of soy oil or also higher food use to the point where maybe down the road we see that 2019-20 figure for the food, seed, and industrial use category inch back up a bit and potentially tighten stocks, you know, ever so slightly. And meanwhile, cumulative exports of soybean oil are very strong and we're higher than last year by roughly 42%. So all those things kind of supportive of demand hanging in there. And as such, I don't think we'll see too much in the way of changes there. And then any changes for 2020-21 coming from, you know, the effect on carry-in by any changes made to the current marketing year. So
got it.
That's what I think we're looking at for the soy complex.
All right, let's shift over to sugar. And Nicole, I'm just going to start by saying, you know, because the USDA, the folks there that do these projections, they don't get a lot of kudos. And boy,
you're right.
What a tough year to peg numbers, you know.
Totally.
You've had
totally.
The force majeure.
We can relate.
Yes, we totally can relate. Yeah, just play this back next week after the WASD. So.
Right. Don't say that, Michael. What are you doing?
It's just joking. Anyway, very tough job, especially with the force majeures this year, the issues down in Mexico, the issues in Canada with the bee production, and ultimately deliveries. And trying to peg this 13.5 targeted stocks to use ratio. So, you know, boy, a tough job. And, you know, I'll give my hats off to them for their hard work and the challenges that they have to do that. But as we look Correct. As they came out with their initial projections last WASD, and, you know, it's hard to do at this point because, you know, you're just getting the beets in the ground. But, you know, their numbers are expecting a somewhat normal crop, obviously, and the cane production to recover in Louisiana, for example. But the big one is that's really hard for them is that deliveries number and the impact on COVID and food manufacturers reducing or shuttering production for that bit of time and how that impacts. So I think, you know, as you look at going forward, that's going to be the big one that they're going to have to try to figure out what that impact has been and how how those deliveries for the next crop are affected from that. So, you know, overall production wise, you know, it's a little early to tell, but the beet production should get back to normal. Cane production and Mexico, which was a big factor this last year in their issues,
right,
you know, as we move forward, you know, we're going to have to wait until November, December when they start back up. But, you know, hopefully they can have a similar trend in increase in their crop to get back to normal and end up with that targeted 13.5 stocks to use ratio. We have heard some rumblings about some folks wanting to have the USDA open up some additional quota, especially on the refined side. So that's something we're going to be watching. Who knows what they're going to do? Because as you know, if you look back a few years ago, when they did open up some additional quota in the summertime, things shifted as far as the increased production numbers. The beet industry started early, and as a result, that did put some pressure on the market and created some, you know, some
interesting conditions.
Yeah, interesting conditions. We'll put it that way. Thank you.
You're
so those are the key things that we're looking at. But, you know, June usually doesn't bring too many major changes in sugar.
Right, right. Well, hopefully we'll have a reasonably quiet WASDE next week.
Yeah, hopefully so. But yeah, we're going to go ahead and wrap this one up, and hope everybody has a great weekend. And remember what we said at the beginning, let's live with more empathy in life, and you know, live with an attitude of gratitude, be thankful for what you have. And until next week, or until next Thursday, when we do our WASDE podcast, we'll see how we did. Have a good weekend, everybody.
See everyone.
Bye now.
That concludes this podcast episode. For expanded commentary and more detailed information, log on to McKinney Favelle's IQ Ingredient Intelligence platform and listen to our Market Insights podcast. If you're not a subscriber, visit McKinney-Favelle.com for more information. And as always, follow us on YouTube, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter.